Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are still covering the ratification debates, and we are actually diving into Pennsylvania. Now, the other than the North Carolina debates, the Pennsylvania debates were, they're very similar to, I would say, the Massachusetts debates. And that's just due to the fact that what they gave us primarily within the ratification records was really everything that Wilson and McKinnon said. There wasn't both sides of the argument and documentations. You'll see that they're responding, but they don't tell you necessarily who and so forth. And the only way you can really get to the full documentation of the ratification debates is by going to the documentation history of the ratification of the Constitution, which is the University of Wisconsin. They're still doing this. They started this in 1976, and they've been pulling out records, both letters from the different congresses, or I should say the different legislatures, regarding the players, you know, writing home and other people corresponding, the news articles. I mean, there's just a overwhelming amount of data that they've pulled together. And in some respects, I believe they're creating a level of confusion, because when you get to so much detail regarding a particular event or an issue, then you can easily be overwhelmed by, you know, what is the important stuff. And so it's interesting that Pennsylvania kind of helped, because they separated from all of the clutter and all of the conversations and everything else. They separated the arguments and statements, testimony, from those who were selling, if you want to call it selling, the Constitution. And so why is that important? Because this is what Pennsylvania used to buy into, or in other words, these were the statements, these were the words that convinced Pennsylvania to buy into the Constitution. Had they only had people get up and provide the negative side of the Constitution, I think every single state would have not ratified. They would have rejected the Constitution. But instead, you know, they had these debates. And so Pennsylvania kind of looked at it and goes, well, we don't want to add what these, you know, these naysayers and who knows, people just making stuff up just to keep us from buying into the Constitution. So it's interesting. I just want to share this with you before we dive into the Pennsylvania debates, because it does have a uniqueness to it. Instead of seeing all the different debates, I love the Virginia one, because you actually see who's responding to who and that kind of detail. But when you start getting into what the weather was like, I remember reading somebody's extrapolation of Madison and the Bill of Rights and what was going on. They got into, and they didn't deliberately stay in the details, but they got into a few interesting nitnoid details, like that very first session was a very hot summer, and there were people that actually died, and somebody wrote in one of their correspondents' home that they believed that there was too many people drinking really cold water, you know, to an abundance that killed them. People were dying from drinking cold water. And I think that stuff is nice to know. I mean, if you've saturated yourself and understand what you really need to understand, then getting into those types of little details, okay, I'm not gonna say anything bad about anybody that wants, you know, that level of details. But let's at least get what we need to know and understand about the Constitution. How was it sold? Madison was very clear to John G. Jackson in 1821 that it didn't matter what his thoughts on the Constitution were, or anybody at the Constitutional Convention. They were the authors of this. They debated it, they argued it, and they worked out those details. What really mattered was how the Constitution was sold to the states. This is what this is going to do. Because as they described it, those were the terms and definitions of the Constitution. In other words, this is what you're supposed to be expecting out of your federal government. If they're not doing this, or if they go beyond this, then they're violating the Constitution. They talk about that a lot. And so the interesting thing, again, is that Pennsylvania provides us really, you know, the side of this is what it's going to do, this is what it's going to do, we're the sovereigns, and that type of stuff. And Mr. Wilson does talk a lot about how the people are the sovereigns. He was not one that bought into American republicanism, because nowhere does he really talk about the sovereignty of government. And in a republican form of system, we do not want the sovereigns to control everything. We want to delegate to a governing body sovereignty over very specific things. And that was the concept of American republicanism, because those sovereigns had representation in the forms of government. And that's why they created the Senate. The Senate actually was the house that was the representation for the states, the states' legislatures. And in the state legislatures, the Senate is supposed to be the representation for the counties. This has been completely lost. And when I talk to people, they can't even understand the sovereignty of a government. The real problem we have is, if you want to understand why states are going blue, it is because we no longer recognize the sub-element, and we only recognize the representation of people. So we've moved our representation towards a democracy to ensure that people get an equal percentage of voice instead of it. And this is the danger, and I wrote an article about this, and I'm going to talk more about this, and I've actually talked in the past about this. The design was never to give equal representation to the people within a state and across the United States. Every state had protection. A good case in point is, if you added up probably Wyoming, and you probably added up the Dakotas and Montana, you probably have more representation in the county of Riverside, California, than you do in those four states. And what would have happened had they been able to say, well, we're going to blur the lines, and this is why the Constitution would have been rejected and Delaware drew the line. The reason why the Sherman Compromise came out, this American republicanism, was recognizing that the interests of states needed to be protected, not just in the Senate, but in the House as well. That's why every state was guaranteed a minimum of one representative. Counties were supposed to be the same way. Counties were supposed to be guaranteed representation instead of blurring the county lines. And you know what really bothers me? What really bothers me is that we have Republicans that I talk to, legislative Republicans in states, rhinos, especially in the state of Washington and some of these blue states, rhinos. You tell them that you shouldn't be representing five counties. You should only be representing your county. And they feel like, oh, well, I'm going to lose my, you know, my clout because I'm not representing the same amount of people. And they don't get it. They just don't understand that you're not supposed to be representing a percentage of people or a number of people. You're supposed to be representing the people from your county and their plight. And a great example is, we have one particular representative that lives in the mountains, that is of a very particular county, that doesn't really understand. I mean, it's not that they can't understand, but how can they truly represent the interests of the particular county instead of five counties? And in California, it's 10. And some of those 10 counties go from desert to mountains. And you got to be kidding me. They're supposed to be protecting against the mob of LA and the mob of these metropolises in California. They have that. The reason why the populated cities are running over and destroying your state, if you live in Indiana, if you live in Illinois, if you live in Nevada, if you live in any state that has a large population center, usually just one, they destroy the state because they're apportioning their representation based on head counts instead of recognizing the sub-element of government. So anyway, that's one of the things that, you know, kind of gets me about the Pennsylvania debates. I mean, Wilson's a good guy. He's, you know, he's right on regarding the people are the ultimate sovereigns. But he drives that home and does not recognize the American republicanism that actually came out of the Constitutional Convention with Sherman's compromise or the Connecticut Compromise. Anyway, as you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence necessary, that gives you the evidence of the solution that we need to implement to get our republic back. We give you the ins and outs of Republic Review, and this is the only show to provide. We're focused on the solution. We're not focused on the distraction. Forgive me, I know there's lots of people that want to know what the heck's going on with the Super Bowl or what's going on with Trump, what's going on with the election. I'm telling you, those are the distractions. If you want to actually engage a real solution, you have to focus on the solution. We have to focus on the solution. The more we focus on the solution, the more we engage in the solution, the quicker we are going to be able to unite and get together and actually solve this problem. Don't wait till it's too late, my friends. Anyway, we'll be right back with Wilson and McKinnon on the Pennsylvania ratification debates. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And one of those things I forgot to bring up was Red State Coffee. If you drink coffee and you want to support this show, you want to support the concept of actually saving our Constitution, getting the federal government into compliance. You know, I realize that people do not understand when you allow unlimited government, because there's a lot of people, and there's no doubt in my mind, people bring this up all the time. How do you get everybody to give up their little part of the teat? Because there are so many people that are on the teat. I have to help you, one, recognize what and how defined the Constitution really was and how limited the general government really is to that Constitution. So the question is, are you at a point where you can acknowledge, are you in a space in your life that you can see and understand that the fact that you are sucking on that tea to government, in other words, you receiving benefits and so forth of unconstitutional government, that it is wrong, but hey, everybody else is doing it. If we cannot back away from unconstitutional government, we are doomed. Because the day is coming. As a matter of fact, it's going to be interesting. I was having a conversation with family last night. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting because I believe that really what fools people, because most people are very guarded when we're in austere times. People are looking and go, man, why is our economy sucking? Why are we having all of these problems? And people go, this is the end times. Well, the end times indicate a rampantness of evil, a rampantness of perversion, debasement of society, and, you know, evil is good and good is evil. But that doesn't mean that, you know, people are going to be, well, it doesn't mean that we don't have homeless. Homeless is a problem that government has created. Homelessness is, and I don't want to get into all of that, so let me just focus back onto this one issue. The one issue is that I believe that America and the world will be set up because it will seem like, you know, we'll be prosperous. Things will be going okay. That is the facade that gets people to believe and buy into, okay, we're just going to continue doing these things because things are okay. What will end up happening in the midst of everything being great, I mean, it's just like, you know, there's no stop. America is on the rebound. Think about this, friends. This is what we're seeing. America's really on the rebound. We're going to take the helm, you know, and every country is doing really well. I can't say every country, but bottom line is that the big countries will seem to be doing really great. And then all of a sudden, some little shakeup happens. And that's when our liberties go. The question is, and that's when the teat goes. That's when the paradigm shifts completely. I don't believe that the paradigm will shift maybe economically, but it will shift government-wise. And if you want to be a part of the new government, you're going to have to take the mark. And most people will say, "Of course, I want this, my friends." If you're on the teat of government, now it's one thing to, you know, serve in the military and have a retirement. That is a compensation contract, but it's another thing to be getting something for nothing. Farmers get something for nothing. Corporations, banks, the NFL, NBA, and all of these sports leagues, they don't pay taxes. They're getting something for nothing. All of these entities are on the teat of government. And who is paying the bill? The middle class, those who are paying the taxes, middle class and up. Fact of the matter is that when all of a sudden they rip that teat away from you and say, if you want that kind of teat, you're going to have to buy into this. I don't believe that we're really going to be facing, you know, desperation and those types of things when that transition occurs. And I don't think that it'll seem like it'll be that big of a deal, other than the fact that you just don't have anything guaranteeing your protection anymore. Nothing that guarantees, when the Constitution goes, you will no longer have any governmental rights that you can say what you want to say, you can worship your religion the way you want to, and so forth. When those things shift, it won't seem like a big deal. And then what they do, and because it's what they do right now, and it's what they did in Germany, they'll isolate a small band of people, boom, and they'll grab those people. And the people that they'll probably grab first, in my book, will be those who understand the Constitution. Why is that? Because that's less than 1% of the people in America. If you did the math, I mean, what's 1% of 300 million plus? It would be 3 million plus. If you do the math, that's a small slice, but if you actually put 3 million people in one spot, that's a lot of people. But we're not all in one spot. We're all across the 50 states. take 3 million and divide that by 50, and then you start having some manageable numbers. But it's not even 1%. The people that really understand the Constitution, that are doing just like what GR here is doing, that's a very small percentage. There's people that kind of understand. They go, yeah, we want to support this. But they're not really supporting. They're not really being a part of the solution. That's why this is all so important. We have to recognize that what we're doing by drinking from the teat of government is we are sucking on a brain-numbing and a mind-numbing and a social-numbing elixir that is getting us to buy into enslavement to the state. You know, there used to be a point in time, and I remember talking to Ward Connerly about this, and he wrote in his book, Creating Equal, there used to be a time where people would have pride that they would not take the handout from government. It's one thing to take handouts from church, but the handout from government means that that money is coming with compulsion. People do not have the choice. They grab it from you and they try to give it to others. And that was repugnant to Americans at one point in time. It was repugnant to baby boomers. What the heck happened? Because if you look today, nobody wants to give up that lucre that is being, by force, taken from people. Anyway, so let me dive into the Pennsylvania debates. And this one is regarding the, you know, kind of the limitations of government. This is, again, Mr. Wilson. He says, "Sir, I think there is a subject with regard to which this Constitution deserves approbation." And, you know, if you didn't notice, they use the word approbation a lot. That means consent, approval, praise, or what have you. And so that deserves approval. I mean the accuracy with which the line is drawn, and that is emphasized, the line is drawn between the powers of the general government and those of the particular state governments. We have heard some general observations on this subject from the gentlemen who conduct the opposition. They have asserted that these powers are unlimited and undefined. In other words, that they have these general powers, and they don't. These words are as easily pronounced as limited and defined. There you go. And he highlights those as well. They have already been answered by my honorable colleague, Mr. McKean. Therefore, I shall not enter into an explanation, but it is not pretended that the line is drawn with mathematical precision. The inaccuracy of language must, to a certain degree, prevent the accomplishment of such a desire. Whoever views the matter in true light will see that the powers are as minutely enumerated and defined as was possible, and will also discover that the general clause against which so much exception is taken in nothing more than what was necessary to render effectual and particular powers that are granted. Now, the general clause is the general welfare, or the general defense and welfare. And again, he talks about this general clause. And so I'm going to highlight this so I can just go back to this right now and say, will also discover that the general clause against which so much exception is taken is nothing more than what was necessary to render effectual the particular powers that are granted. Very powerful stuff, but if you have to understand that the general clause, and I think Madison actually says this best in his veto of the bonus bill, the infrastructure bill that the Congress was trying to create a Department of Transportation. And he refers to the general clause as basically saying the general clause only applies to the enumerated powers. And as a matter of fact, that is repetitive regarding the, you know, I call them the four mystical clauses, but the general welfare and defense, the commerce clause, the necessary and proper clause, and the supremacy clause only apply to the enumerated powers. They were never intended, I'm going to say this again, they were never intended to grant any new powers. So I had a conversation with a good man this weekend, and I asked him, you know the Ten Commandments, right? How well do you understand the Ten Commandments? He goes, I understand. This guy's a pastor, okay? And he says, I understand them really well. And I go, well, why is that? And he goes, why is it that you understand adultery? I mean, because adultery is literally just when a man has sex with, you know, another woman or outside of marriage. The same thing with a woman having sex outside of marriage with another man or what have you. And, oops, it looks like I'm not going to be able to get into this. So I will tell you this little conversation that I had when we come back. So maybe that's a little hook, but it's worth listening to. Because the light came on, I could see the light come on in this pastor's eyes as I was talking about the Constitution. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Now, forgive me. I know that I really want to get through, and you want to really get through these ratification debates because this is treasure. Every single one of these statements that I'm reading, these things are divulging the truth. I mean, they're not even diamonds in the rough. These are cut, finished diamonds. This is exactly what we need to put the jewels in our crown of liberty. It is that powerful. But as I was saying, I was having a conversation. I went to a party meeting this weekend. And the gentleman that I was talking to was a pastor. And as I was talking to him about, trying to give him the understanding of the Constitution and how important the ratification debates were. But instead of telling him that these things were really, really important, he, you know, being a pastor, he understood that the Ten Commandments were very, very important. And so I asked him, well, how is it that you understand what adultery is? Because, obviously when you read the Ten Commandments, can somebody live by that law when, you know, they don't need to read the scriptures? As long as they live by the Ten Commandments, they'll be okay, right? And he goes, well, yeah. And I go, so, and this is where I started talking about just the adultery, because we all know that Christ redefined adultery. And to be clear, he really broke down the commandments into two basic commandments. But my point was, is that so then when somebody reads that thou shalt not commit adultery, that means that thou shalt not have physical relations with another woman or man or, you know, the opposite sex or with anybody, period, outside of marriage, right? And he goes, well, yeah. And then I go, but what about those people that, you know, look after a person with lust in their heart? And all of a sudden, the light just came on. He goes, oh. And I said, so you understand the importance of the rest of the scriptures that help clarify exactly what these commandments mean. What it means to love thy God with all thy heart and all thy might. You know, and those types of things. And he's all of a sudden, yeah, absolutely. The scriptures are integral in understanding the Ten Commandments. He thought maybe I was trying to, you know, trick him, but bottom line was that they're inseparable. You understand that? The Ten Commandments and the scriptures, the Old and New Testament, are inseparable. If you really want to understand the Ten Commandments, you have to read the accompanying scriptures. And as you can see, when you go from the Old Testament and the Law of Moses to Christ, it is truly a new testament, a new covenant with the house of Israel. So the interesting thing is that, you know, as lights came on and I said, so now let me ask you, how well do you understand the Constitution? And he already knew because I had given him this metaphor regarding the Ten Commandments. And he goes, I think you have to understand the accompanying documents. And so I said, okay, so what are those? And he thought maybe the letters and the writings and the opinions. And I go, no. Now, Moses and, you know, some of these prophets, I'm sure that they bought homes and they did transactions and they communicated to other people. Is that what you use to understand the, you know, the Ten Commandments? And another light came on and he said, no. Strictly the scriptures. And I go, because those scriptures are revelations, right? They are very specific about that particular thing, the laws that God has with the people. And he goes, yeah, I get it. I said, then what is the scriptures for the Constitution? And he really didn't know. He thought maybe the Federalist Papers. And I go, the Federalist Papers were articles that were written in the newspaper. And they kind of were insightful. Most people look at and they believe that the Federalist Papers were it. But they weren't. And he goes, then what is? And I explained to him the ratification debates and what they really were. Boom, another light came on. And the reason I went up to this pastor is because he gave the invocation. And in doing so, in giving the invocation, you could really hear the desire and the passion in his heart to, Lord, help us please drain the swamp. Help us please drain the swamp. And as I mentioned to him, because I said I recognize that. And I may be confusing some of these conversations because I said all of these things with these people at this political party. So I hope all of these things I said with this pastor. But I know I did say some of these things because I know I talked to him. I didn't confront him. I just said, I understand you really want to drain the swamp. If you really want to drain the swamp, you have to understand the Constitution. And so I believe, so we're going to be meeting, and I believe that if you start with leaders, I am an advocate. I am a huge advocate because I believe you can be a leader. I believe anybody can be a leader. There are people that are in leadership roles. When I say leadership roles, sometimes they're managers, right? Sometimes pastors aren't really leading. Sometimes they're just managing and helping, you know, because it's hard for people to distinguish the difference between the manager and the leader. But a lot of times pastors do lead because they do and they want to do the thing that's right. But it's hard to differentiate between what is good for you and what's good for the body or the people you're serving or what have you. Anyway, So I'm hoping, and I truly believe in this concept of training the trainer. I'm hoping to be able to sit down with this pastor so that he can become a beacon of light, so that he can actually help illuminate everybody's life regarding the ratification debates and understanding the Constitution, because that's how it's done. And the intent is not to, for me or any organization I want to work with, to try to go out and teach everybody. We don't have the time. If you've heard me, we'll be lucky if I'm on the air in 4 years from now. As a matter of fact, my prayer is that I'm not on the air in 4 years from now, that I am actually helping other people coming to the new levels of enlightenment of liberty and what government needs to do to fully embrace liberty. And as a matter of fact, that goes to this thought I had, and forgive me because I'm completely getting away from the Pennsylvania debates, but I have a promo that talks about businesses that are supporting liberty and the businesses that are out supporting the progressive ideologies of political correctness, that, oh, I don't want to talk about the Constitution because it's too controversial. Are you kidding me? It is the Constitution that allows this, even this conversation of homosexual marriage, to exist. If we were living, the Constitution is not a theocracy. Now, people don't like the idea that there are opposing sides. Well, can't we all just get along? It's not that way, my friends. And the fact of the matter is, the difference between the Constitution and these other people that are demanding political correctness is just that, liberty and compulsion. Political correctness is compulsion. They are demanding that you do not allow that type of language, that type of thought, to permeate. You do not support that. If you do, we will come after you. We will hurt you. What do you think that is, my friends? That is compulsion. And I am here to tell you that if you understand the concept of communism, it is the epitome of compulsion. And we're heading closer and closer. I point this out to people all the time. Oh, well, we're free. No, we're not. As a matter of fact, what about that young man, and I forget the guy's name, in Iowa, that tore down the homosexual flag off of this homosexual church and burnt it? He's serving 15 years for burning that flag because it was considered hate speech. Are you kidding me? We have lost our First Amendment rights. There are way too many courts, and who knows if that case will get up to the if that case will get up to the Supreme Court in a timely manner. That person is suffering at the hands of political oppression. You can't do anything to a person that tears down. Now, you can charge him for tearing down your flag, but what's the cost of a flag? It's petty. It's not a felony. It's petty crime. It's a misdemeanor. So this guy should only have done time for a misdemeanor. But because what he did was perceived as something that was unconstitutional, called a hate crime, he is serving more time. Do you understand the nefariousness, the evil of hate crimes? The concept of court saying this is hate. It is tantamount to a bill of attainder, and we are to be protected per the Constitution. That governments cannot pass bills of attainder to make this kind of speech, this kind of expression, illegal. I'm sorry. Because I've been going through the ratification debates, there are these things that have been kind of percolating, and forgive me. Getting back to, well, it looks like I just lost another segment. We will get back to Mr. Wilson and the ratification debates in Pennsylvania as soon as these next two promos are over. We will be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so this is where Wilson actually cites, and the interesting thing is how they cite back then. He cites Montesquieu. Anyway, Mr. Wilson says this: a very important difficulty arose from comparing the extent of the country to be governed with the kind of government which it would be proper to establish in it. It has been an opinion, countenanced by high authority, quote, "The natural property of small states is to be governed as a republic, of middle ones to be subject to a monarchy, and of large empires to be swayed by despotic prince." And that the consequences is that in order to preserve the principles of established government, the state must be supported in extent it is required, and that the spirit of the state will alter in proportion as it extends in contracts or contracts its limits. Close quote. And that was Montesquieu, Book 8, Chapter 20. This opinion seems to be supported rather than contradicted by the history of the governments in the old world. Here, then, the difficulty appeared in full view. On one hand, the United States contain an immense extent of territory, and according to the foregoing opinion, a despotic government is best adapted to that extent. On the other hand, it was well known that however the citizens of the United States might with pleasure submit to the legitimate restraints of a Republican Constitution, they would reject the indignation and fetters of despotism. What then was to be done? The idea of a Confederate Republic, and this is so brilliant of Mr. Wilson pointing this out, the idea of a Confederate Republic presented itself. This kind of constitution has been thought to have, quote, all the internal advantages of a Republican together with the external force of a monarchical government. If you just understand that one blurb, wow. Because what he's saying is that instead of creating a federation where you, because in a federation is where you have the despotic rule, you give them general powers to have this despotic rule over this large body of states. Instead, they went with this hybrid in creating a federal government, but they limited them like a confederacy. They only gave them the necessary powers to protect us and to oversee what was best for our trade. That's why. Now, let me ask you this. If our government is doing what is best for us, then why have they shut down our agricultural production and made us dependent upon South America and other producing nations of produce and so forth? Now, there are advantages of having trade so that during our winter we can have fresh fruit. But when it comes to buying very specific things, we are now obligated in buying very specific foods from different countries and so forth. These are what they call trade agreements. Trade agreements are evil and they are wrong. We need to actually promote competition. We need to promote, because what would happen if all of a sudden competition really was reintroduced in the agricultural world? Well, what would happen is prices would go down, because people would actually be trying to compete if government wasn't controlling the prices. Do you really believe we live in a capitalistic world, that America is capitalistic? No, we do not. America is a mercantile economy today, because the government restricts and controls who does what, and they make sure that we're not, you know, upsetting the world and the world economic cart by overproducing or doing one thing or another. And that's why these oligarchies like OPEC and other oligarchies exist, to ensure that the mercantile system at the global level is being maintained, so that everybody has, you know, a little bit of a drink out of the trough. Isn't that a great thing? That's noble, but it is despotic. Anyway, so this whole concept of confederate, and I actually tell people that we're really a hybrid. We're both a federation and a confederacy. And people look at me, and this is when their eyes glaze over and go, huh? What the heck's he talking about? Mr. Wilson then goes on in another little, you know, tirade or another citation. There necessarily exists in government a power from which there is no appeal, and which, for that reason, may be termed supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable. Where does this power reside? To this question, writers on different governments will give different answers. Sir William Blackstone will tell you that in Britain, the power is lodged in the British Parliament, that the Parliament may alter the form of government, and that its power is absolute. Without control, the idea of a constitution limiting and superintending the operations of legislative authority seems to have been accurately understood in Britain. There are at least two traces of practice conformable to such a principle. The British Constitution is what the British Parliament pleases. When the Parliament transferred legislative authority to Henry VIII, the act transferring could not, in the stretch exception of the term, be called unconstitutional. To control the power and conduct of the legislature by an overruling constitution was an improvement in the science and practice of government restored to the American states. Perhaps some politician who has not considered with sufficient accuracy our political systems would answer that in our governments the supreme power was vested in the constitutions. This opinion approaches a step nearer to the truth, but does not reach it. The truth is that in our governments, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power remains in the people, as our constitutions are superior to our legislatures. So the people are superior to the constitutions. Indeed, the superiority in the last instance is much greater for the people, for the people possesses over the Constitution control in act as well as right. Now, that was a mouthful. I'm going to read that last part again just so that you understand, because it's hard for me to even understand sometimes when I read this. This opinion approaches a step nearer to the truth, but does not reach it. The truth is that in our governments, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power remains in the people. Now, when he says the people, he means the ultimate in electing people and so forth. However, when we create a constitution, we have enumerated powers to that government. The only way we have the ability, other than through a revolution, to take back or to give powers is the Constitution. The question is, if you understand the enumerations of constitutions, in those enumerated powers, the Constitution and the government or those legislatures are supreme. Now, I've said this time and time again. Mr. Wilson constantly refers to the people are supreme, the people are the sovereigns, and so forth. We can't have both. We have a state government, we have a county government, and we have a national government. And to each, we have delegated very specific powers. They are sovereigns over those powers. The problem arises when all of a sudden one government is exercising power that wasn't even given to the states. A great example. The states never had an environmental protection rules and plans and agencies or anything like that. They may have had, you know, wilderness or parks or actually, when we started getting into the ecological and the environmental space, the federal government pretty much assumed all sorts of powers beforehand. States today have environmental agencies and offices and what have you because of the federal government. So this is kind of like the chicken and the egg question for you. Where is the constitutionality of the Environmental Protection Agency? Because it's not in the U.S. Constitution. That was a usurped power. The states have created it because of that. In other words, they've amended the Constitution based on unconstitutional government that they have to basically conform to the federal government's laws and regulations and so forth. Do you understand the insidiousness? And so what he's kind of talking about is that the people may be the supreme power, but we have completely lost this concept of our constitutions and understanding the limitations within those. And so, you know, we get convinced by consensus. Oh, this is the, you remember the 60s, the ecological movement, the bald eagle is dying because of DDT, and all of these ecological issues were just all of a sudden flooding us. Well, Nixon created the EPA. And in doing so, Nixon egregiously violated, and Congress egregiously violated the Constitution. And then they started dictating. And as some people have pointed out, Mark Levin is one, that DDT, there is zero evidence that DDT was causing any problems with any of wildlife and animals in the wild kingdom. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. We will be back with more of the Pennsylvania debates. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.